to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. The Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research recently paid tribute to some of its most senior scientists at the University of Calgary and the University of Alberta. Their discoveries have made major impacts across the medical field, from nuclear magnetic resonance to proteomics, and heart disease to hip replacements. And when American scientist and author Dr. Lawrence Krauss visited Alberta, he urged the research community to speak out against scientific ignorance. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. The Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research recently held tributes in Edmonton and Calgary to honor its long-term researchers, scientists who have been working for 20 and 25 years with funding from the foundation. Part of the celebrations included a lecture from American scientist and author, Dr. Lawrence Krauss. Lawrence is the director of the Center for Education and Research in Cosmology and Astrophysics at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. The title of one of his books is The Physics of Star Trek, and the subject of his talk was the role of scientists as responsible citizens and evangelists for science.
The point is that scientists, many scientists are shy, I think, about going out and speaking to the public, speaking in public forums where that we don't have control in some sense, going to schools, going to churches. But every week throughout this country and throughout the United States and the rest of the world, there are people who are literally every week speaking out against science, saying science is the enemy for religious reasons sometimes. And I think that the same kind of evangelical notion that the enemies of science has, scientists have to have, namely that we believe not that science is the cure for all human problems, but that science is a vital part of our society that's going to be vitally important for curing some of our problems, and that we feel that people have to become literate in order that they, as voters and citizens, can make well-informed choices.
What makes science a target?
I think what makes science a target is, first, it's highly visible. Secondly, people are afraid because, first, of the power of science. I think science has affected our lives in tremendous ways, good and bad. That's one thing. But also because science does not directly impact upon God and is not impacted upon by the existence of God, science is independent of those religious questions. Some people, at least, view science as the enemy. That science, because it doesn't explicitly involve God, is therefore inherently immoral and must be attacked.
My sense sometimes is that people want black and white answers, and science doesn't always give you a black and white answer. In fact, more often than not, it just simply raises more questions, and people have a hard time with that.
The problem is we scientists have not communicated well what science does. It's not just the wonderful things we discover. The puzzles we haven't yet discovered the answers to. Science is really based on a continual process of discovery and questioning, and for some reason, we don't celebrate enough the ideal of not knowing. The fact that not knowing is not terrifying. For some people, not knowing is terrifying. But for scientists, not knowing is inspiring because it gives you a motivation to go out and look. And I think so that when science, for example, doesn't explain everything, then people tend to think it doesn't explain anything. And that's a huge mistake. And again, with evolution, the fact that evolution doesn't explain the origin of life, and never did, does not imply that evolutionary biology does not explain the diversity of species on Earth through natural selection and random mutation. But it's often attacked because they say, well, you don't understand the origin of life. And that's true, but you can't attack a scientific theory for what it hasn't yet explained. The question is, does it explain things and does it make predictions? And if it does that successfully, it's good enough for us.
Now, what you're talking about, though, is not just necessarily speaking about science, but actually speaking out. And that pushes you into the political arena.
Well, it pushes you in the political arena sometimes. That's absolutely true, because scientific questions become political ones. But I think scientists have an important role to play in the political arena in the sense of informing government and citizens of basic issues that would be relevant. Whether or not you exploit the Alberta tar sands is a political question, but you should know something about the implications of that for the environment before you make that political decision. And there, scientists, I think, have an obligation to speak out.
You brought up three very important issues for society, and they deal with things like climate change, missile defense. Why are these such critical issues where scientists should get involved, in your perspective?
Well, because they're going to affect the future of our children and the future of our society, and all of them relate to fundamental, in my opinion, fundamental misperceptions or misunderstandings about the nature of science. Global warming, again, the perception or misperception that there's some great deal of uncertainty in the impact of man-made carbon dioxide on and other greenhouse gases on the climate. There is no such great controversy. The fact that we can wait and, you know, we'll come up with some solution down the road, which is a typical response, that science will come up with solution, some solution 20 years down the road, is again incorrect. That, I mean, we may, but at this point, all evidence suggests that we have to act now. Missile defense is a situation that affects the security of everyone in across the world, and investing huge amounts of money in a system that doesn't work and then relying on it hinders the security of our country and also takes away the economic viability of, instead of spending the tens of billions of dollars on a system that doesn't work, we could spend it on doing things that might help our security, like ways to examine cargo containers that come into great ports in the United States for nuclear materials and things like that, which would have a much greater effect of increasing our security. And finally, the issue of intelligent design, primarily because evolution is the basis of modern biology, and the 21st century, in some sense, is going to be the biological century. And if our children are going to be able to compete in the 21st century, they'd better be able to understand biology.
What are the costs of speaking out, and what are the costs of remaining silent?
Well, the cost of speaking out can sometimes mean, in the United States, it can mean removal of your post if you're a government scientist, for example, as has often happened. But the costs of being silent are much greater, obviously, because they're worth much greater for our society. We need. Some people have said we're at the end of the Enlightenment, and if we want to stave off new dark ages, we have to speak out.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Lawrence Krauss, scientist and author from Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. He was speaking at the recent Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research Researcher Appreciation Event. The Fall Research Appreciation Event, hosted by the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, focused on the contributions of some of its most senior scientists, people who have been supported by the foundation for 20 and 25 years. Dr. Kevin Keough is the president and CEO of the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research.
What the foundation does when it supports health research in Alberta is that it finds ways to help support people. Really what research is all about is people using their imagination, using their ingenuity, using their inventiveness, their innovation, and actually really their integrity and their dedication to things to be able to find new things, to work on new things. These people really work because not only are they interested in the problem, they're interested in the solution to the problem leading to something positive. Foundation asks of these people a lot. We put them through rigorous review. They work really hard. They provide really tremendous output that leads to good health, better health for Albertans. And I just think it's really important to celebrate the fact that these people have made these major accomplishments. If they've been with the foundation for that period of time, that is quite a major accomplishment, actually, of which they can be proud and Albertans can be proud. So we're here to celebrate with them.
Well, you mentioned it, 20 and 25 years. That is a long time to be supporting one stream of research. Why do you do it for so long? So many people, they get their money for 1 or 2 years, and here these people have been lucky to get it for 20 and 25.
Sure, one of the things I've got to tell you is that they're not lucky. They're really good. And they only get it for 20 or 25 years if they are really good, because every 5 years we ask them to come back and recompete for their support. Not just meet some bar that they have to get over and that's okay. They come back and go into a whole new competition every 5 years. So this is a very, very, and the standards are the highest that we can apply to them. So this means that they are really doing extremely well by international standards. Why did we do it for so long? Because research, the doing of research is not something that you just jump in and out of. Research, as you learn things, the research, very seldom do we have these kind of eurekas. that people think we have all the time. Sure, we get one of those every now and then, and those of us who are lucky enough to ever have that happen just really can celebrate, but often it takes quite a bit of time. It's an incremental process. You go out and say, I think it works this way, and then you say, well, if it works that way, I have to test it. And I test it, and I find, oops, that's not how it works. And then I go back, and I look at it again, and when I've tested it, I found something new that points me in another direction. And it just, and so all of that really takes time.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
Oh, you're welcome, Cheryl.
That was Dr. Kevin Keough, President and CEO of the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research. Among the very first researchers supported by the foundation when it was established a quarter century ago was Dr. Brian Sykes. Brian is a professor of biochemistry and the director of NAMUC, the Nuclear Magnetic Resonance Facility at the University of Alberta.
Well, what I do is look at the structure of proteins and the dynamics of proteins to try to understand how proteins function. So, what do I mean by that? If a protein binds a ligand or a trigger or a target, we try to understand how that happens by looking at the structure of the protein using sophisticated spectroscopic techniques that are referred to as NMR, or nuclear magnetic resonance spectroscopy.
You know, I've been hearing an awful lot about that in recent months. Why is that becoming so big?
Well, there's two things. One part of NMR, the spectroscopic part, allows us to look at molecules, analyze molecules, and determine their structure and function in solution. But another part of NMR is what goes into the so-called MRI, or the imaging and scanning of the human body. So that's another branch of the field. You may have heard a lot about that. So it sort of doubles the exposure, if you will.
Now, you've been involved with the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research as one of their researchers since the beginning for the last 25 years. With all of this new stuff, how have things changed from when you first started studying these things and where you're at now?
Well, I think that's a really important thing, because 25 years ago, when I was a much younger person, the Heritage Foundation bought a nuclear magnetic resonance spectrometer for my laboratory. And that was a huge step. And then that really led, along with a number of other things that they did, through all of the developments that have happened in my lab over 25 years. And so, while now I may be a more recognized scientist or whatever, it's that kind of move 25 years ago to a young scientist that really kicks off a career and really set the stage for the development of the things that we do today, none of which really could have been envisioned at that time. We really didn't know at that time that we were going to be able to do what we do today using these technologies. So that's, I mean, one wants to be really genuine and explicit in one's thanks to the Heritage Foundation, because, well, I got my salary from the university and other sources. They put equipment in the lab, they put graduate students in the lab, they put postdoctoral fellows in the lab, and they really enable a whole career to develop as a function of that.
What would you say has been your most important discovery or contribution to this protein science in the last 25 years with this help from the foundation?
Well, it's always a little hard to pinpoint one thing, but one of the things we've done is the central regulatory protein in your heart is a molecule called troponin C. And when this molecule receives, when the muscle receives a stimulus from the nerves, and there is a release of calcium inside your muscle cells, this triggers muscle contraction by binding to the protein troponin C. And so using NMR spectroscopy, we've been able to elucidate the structure of this molecule in the absence of calcium, the structure of this molecule in the presence of calcium, and begin to understand how it is triggering the muscle contraction process. And then later, as that becomes embellished, we now start to look at drugs that are calcium sensitizing or cardiotronic drugs that bind to this protein that might regulate it in the time of a cardiac infarction or a heart attack or whatever, and understand how those drugs might bind and try to rationalize the design of new agents. But in 1983 or so, when they bought this first spectrometer, we didn't envision we'd be able to do that at all. And by 95 and by a year, a decade or so later, we were able to determine the structure of these molecules and set the stage for the work that we do today.
I have to ask you this. What's NANUC?
Okay, so NANUC, we think, is a clever acronym for the National Nuclear Magnetic Resonance Facility, or the, so NANUC, the National Nuclear. Because these magnets work at very cold temperatures, they're superconducting magnets, we wanted to build our sort of image around the Nook of the North and our northern environment and our cold climate, and so that's where the Nanook acronym came from.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Okay, thank you very much.
That was Dr. Brian Sykes, a professor of biochemistry and director of Nanook at the University of Alberta. A 20-year veteran of support from the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research is Dr. Arthur Prohausker. Arthur is a professor in the Department of Physiology at the University of Alberta, and he is one of the many scientists who came to Alberta because of the Heritage Foundation.
It's actually been fantastic. We've came here from London, England. I'm originally from Australia, but my wife and I decided to come from London, and we weren't really sure what we were going to experience and weren't sure whether we would stay and so on, but we have. And my wife's also a professor here at the university in the music department. I think the thing that the Alberta Heritage has done is created a unique environment for people like me to pursue both basic and clinical research interests. And it's really, I'd say, unique in the world almost. From my experience, having seen things in different countries, the foundation just provides the level of support of both people like myself and our students to be able to do research at a level that is competitive internationally.
Now, with your research, you've been working in the area of physiology, looking at things that will eventually help people who've had strokes and other sorts of neurological damage. What exactly have you been looking for?
Well, I started actually by exploring the way sensory information is used by the brain to control movement. And so about half of my activities have been at the at that basic level. But then probably about 20 years ago, it occurred to me that perhaps I should also try to use the knowledge that we gain, the basic neuroscience knowledge, to see if we can help people with neurological problems. And that's become probably about 70% of what I do now.
Now, one of the examples that was highlighted today was a device that you've developed that has something to do with clicking the teeth to make your hands move?
That's right. There's a device we've developed that has a sensor that is a little bit like a Bluetooth device that you see people wandering around in airports, talking to their cell phones. So it's a little thing that, it's an ear hanger, as they're called, and it picks up vibrations that you elicit with tooth clicks. And it sounds crazy, but people who need to use both hands and somehow need to activate stimulation of the muscles that control the movements they want to make, they want to be hands-free. And so by clicking their teeth, they can activate the stimulator by radio, a wireless transmission, down to a small stimulator cuff on the hand. And this would help people with stroke and spinal cord injury.
When do you expect something like that to be commercialized?
Well, we licensed the technology last year to a company in Los Angeles, and we're working very hard to make this available in the next couple of years.
It sounds really exciting. Thank you very much, Arthur.
Very welcome.
That was Dr. Arthur Prohausker, a professor in the Department of Physiology at the University of Alberta and a scientist with the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research. The Heritage Foundation also celebrated its long-term researchers at the University of Calgary. Dr. Cy Frank is a professor of surgery at the U of C, and he has been supported by the foundation since it was first established 25 years ago.
My research has spanned basic biomedical research on ligament healing and transplantation and gene therapy all the way up to recently. I've been working in health services research and health service reform and trying to improve the healthcare system.
Oh, now how do you do that?
Well, a research and evaluation methodology that looks critically at improving how service is delivered and evaluating it with feedback to the providers that informs improvement of the health system. So we've been running this hip and knee project to improve access to hip and knee replacements that I've been involved with as one of the researchers.
Now, one of the other areas that you've been working with has something to do with the healing of scar tissue. What's involved in that? What's the problem with scar tissue?
Well, in trying to repair ligaments that are stabilizers of joints, we've discovered that they heal with scar, and scar isn't as strong and stiff and resistant to wear or stretch as normal ligaments are. So unfortunately, while it fills the holes with a material, the material isn't as good as it needs to be to function like a ligament. So our research has been on trying to figure out why scar forms, how to prevent the scar from forming, or ideally transforming the scar into normal ligament tissue.
Are you having any enlightenment on that?
Yes, we've actually discovered a number of things about why scar is weaker and less stiff and, you know, less strong and resilient than normal ligaments, and some of our work has led to some of the mechanisms by which that happens, and we've actually done some gene therapy on manipulating it into better quality tissue.
You're being honored today now with the 25 years of research. What part has the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research played in that?
The Heritage Foundation is critical to everything I've ever done. I got my training because of an Alberta Heritage Fellowship that allowed me to leave the country and get training elsewhere. And then they got me started when I came back to start a lab and fund it, and gave me salary security over many years of support to allow me to attract other grant money and build a research center here. So without Heritage, I wouldn't be here.
Thank you very much, Dr. Frank.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Cy Frank, a professor of surgery at the University of Calgary and director of the Bone and Joint Institute there. He is a scientist with the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research. Also on the program for recognition for her 20 years of support from the Heritage Foundation was Dr. Anne Gillis. Anne is a professor in the Faculty of Medicine at the University of Calgary.
I've had a long-standing interest in pacemakers and implantable defibrillators, and we've been involved in research studies looking at the impact of pacemakers for preventing atrial fibrillation. Atrial fibrillation is the most common sustained arrhythmia that we treat, and it's particularly common in patients who need pacemakers because they also have slow heartbeats. And we've conducted studies over the years looking at different pacing therapies for prevention of atrial fibrillation, have demonstrated that in certain patient populations, atrial pacing, that's pacing in the upper chamber of the heart, does prevent atrial fibrillation. We've also investigated a number of newer algorithms to determine their role in managing patients, and have demonstrated that in some patient populations that specific pacing algorithms may terminate certain rhythm problems and prevent patients from developing permanent atrial fibrillation.
Would this be a new use then for pacemakers?
No, pacemakers have been used for many years, but there are two different types of pacemakers. One's where we just put leads in the lower chamber. It's a little bit simpler, a little bit cheaper, and so there's been some debate over the years as to whether the more complicated two or three lead pacemakers have benefit for certain patients. The other main focus in terms of using research in pacemaker patients is that pacemakers are little computers, and they can store a lot of information. And newer pacemakers can provide us with information about arrhythmia, so that's disorders of the heart rhythm, frequency over time. So we actually use them as a diagnostic tool to monitor the frequency of these heart rhythm disorders and look at the impacts of newer therapies. And presently we're involved in a randomized trial where we're looking at a statin, which is a drug used to lower cholesterol, but these drugs have other beneficial effects, and we're actually studying whether one of these statins, simvastatin, prevents atrial fibrillation in pacemaker patients. So we're randomizing them to a placebo or the statin drug and using the diagnostics in the pacemaker to look at the endpoints for the study.
What things are you looking at in terms of changing patient care?
We have a couple of projects underway right now. One relates to patients who have atrial fibrillation. We've developed a new atrial fibrillation clinic that is nurse clinician based. And so the focus of that clinic is that the nurse clinician will initially assess the patient, collect the information about the patient's problem, review material with one of the physicians. We then will make a management plan, perhaps initiate more investigations, and then establish a management plan that is referred back to the referring physician to implement. And by doing this, we've demonstrated that we've been able to reduce access times to medical care for the condition to under 50 days, compared to if someone's referred to me directly with this problem, they often wait up to a year to see me.
You've been supported now for 20 years by the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research. If they hadn't been there, would you be here?
No, I wouldn't be here. As a matter of fact, the AHFMR is one of the reasons why I am in Calgary. At that time and ongoing, they've provided my salary support as initially a clinician investigator. I then became a scholar, a senior scholar, and now a medical scientist. And by protecting my time, it's enabled me to be able to focus on research as well as to continue with my clinical activities. The Heritage Foundation also provides establishment grants to start up research programs, which has been very beneficial as well.
Thank you very much, Anne.
You're welcome. Thanks.
That was Dr. Anne Gillis, a professor in the Faculty of Medicine at the University of Calgary and a scientist with the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research. She was honored recently by the foundation for her 20 years of excellent scientific work. I also spoke with Dr. Cy Frank, Dr. Arthur Prohausker, Dr. Brian Sykes, and Dr. Kevin Keough. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our e-newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, Alberta Innovation and Science, Calgary Technologies, Inc., Alberta Gaming Research Institute, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Alberta Ingenuity, the University of Lethbridge, Alberta Research Council, the Alberta Conservation Association, and the NSERC Industrial Chair in Integrated Landscape Management. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Crocher.